You know, we all have a lot of data, and it has to positively, absolutely stay safe.
It can't get into the wrong hands, and the biggest challenge we have is how to transfer it from here to there. We all know as leaders that legacy tools that transfer our important files and sensitive data are mostly outdated and fall short on security, especially with the demands of today's remote workforce. Relying on outdated technology puts our organization's brand at risk, and that is unacceptable. So we are excited to invite you to step into the future of completely secured managed file transfer from our friends at Kiteworks. Kiteworks is absolutely, positively the most secure managed file platform on the market today. They've been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. And unlike traditional legacy systems with limited functionality, Kiteworks has unmatched software security with ongoing bounty programs and regular pen testing to minimize vulnerabilities. And the coolest part, they have easy to use one-click appliance updates you will love. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's kiteworks.com to get started today. And now the show. Hello, everyone. This is David Morrow. I'm the creator and host of this podcast, which we aptly named Cybercrime Junkies. My co-host Mark Mosier and I are both true crime fans and have been in the cybersecurity industry as professionals for decades. Our goal is to create a podcast that is fun and interesting, as well as one that serves a greater cause. Our cause here is simple. It's to protect you. Unlike 20 years ago, when there were two versions of our lives, with one online and one in physical reality, today there is very little aspect of our personal and professional lives that is not digitized. Because of that, we have to think a little differently. All of us do. So our aim in protecting you is to help you understand in common, normal terms what it means to keep security in our minds. This podcast is for you individually, your family, as well as the organization and brands that we serve. There are a lot of people that unfortunately and sadly want to do us harm, but we can change how we defend ourselves against it. And like any other playground, when we level the playing field, the game is fun. So we hope you listen and hope you download our episodes. The download is really the key. It allows us to keep this podcast going. So in our episodes, you'll find interviews with leaders who protect and build great brands, some comedic relief from time to time, since laughter, after all, is what it's all about, and then some true cybercrime stories so that we can all relate about what this really means in real life. In addition to our regular episodes, which we will release on Monday mornings, we will also have additional premium content available for those who want to subscribe. There you can gain access to exclusive videos, interviews, security awareness training lessons, ridiculous outtakes, and some more fun member-only things. If you become a fan of the show, one thing we would love and appreciate is if you simply bought us a coffee. There's a link in the show notes and on our website. Again, please enjoy the show. Give us feedback right on our website, cybercrimejunkies.com. Thank you so much for listening. And now the show. Lucky to work for a great group of people you really believe in.
Find yourself making an impact.
Technology is a river that flows through every aspect of an organization, and today is different. We put ourselves and our organizations literally at risk of complete destruction every single time we get online. One click, one distraction is all it takes. Hi, Cybercrime Junkies. This is your host, David Morrow, along with co-host Mark Mosier.
Come join us as we explore our research into these blockbuster true crime stories,
along with interviews of leaders who built and protect great brands. Hey, welcome, Mike. How are you?
I am fantastic. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Doing great. How about yourself? Right.
Doing well.
So, welcome to the studio, Mike. Thanks. Miller, mentor, chief information security officer to the stars, author of a phenomenal cyber security playbook that we're going to get into. Just welcome, man. I really appreciate you taking
this. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
So let's start off. So tell us what your current role is. Let's just start there. Let's start
at the top.
Yeah, no problem. So my current role is a vCISO, which is a virtual CISO. And as part of my role, I work for a smaller organization called Appalachia Technologies in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. And what we do is we work with, we do a full suite of security services for clients, but mainly myself, what I do is act as vCISO for many of their clients. So they may be fractional services where they're getting a few hours a week, what have you. But every vCISO engagement is different. I will say that. But that's pretty much my role.
That's excellent. And do you have a team that works with you? Do you have a whole group? Like how do you segment what gets rolled out to individual clients? Obviously, every single client's security needs are going to be different.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you're right. Every client is different. So my job when I go in to an engagement is I typically like to start at like the policies and procedures, start from the foundation, because those policies and procedures tell a story. And when you look at those and then you start working with organizations, almost every time you're going to identify gaps in those policies and procedures. Yep. And from there, so I'll just talk about, penetration testing, right? Where maybe there's a gap in the pen testing or the vulnerability scans. And then we work with that client. And we, to answer your first question, we do have a team. And we work with our clients if they need penetration tests, SOC services, whatever it is. If that's something that our client wants from our company, then we provide that as well. So,
do you find that a lot of the clients that you work with are really lacking or behind in that policies and procedures, or maybe not even aware of what some of them are?
I don't think I've ever worked with an organization that I've gone in and looked at policies and procedures, and they've all come back like, yep, you're good, checked off. There's always some of them are just small.
Isn't that always the case, though? It's always, yeah. The case, right? Yeah. I mean, and that's why there's such a critical need.
Yeah, because you don't want to say that you're doing something if you're not. And a lot of times you'll go in and the policies were last looked at, 7 years ago. So that tells you a story right there. So,
Yeah.
So things change a little bit in 7 years when it comes to cybersecurity, doesn't it?
You're exactly right. Yes.
And I don't mean to digress too much, but like, what is the impact that the pandemic has had? Like in your role, what are you seeing in terms of how organizations had to pivot to handle the security when employees aren't in a centralized location? Yeah. Protected by a corporate network or an organizational network, but instead they're all over the place working from home with their crack Comcast routers as their firewalls and things like that.
I think the biggest thing the pandemic has caused is for people to kind of see what they're worth a little bit, kind of feel some of their value. And the biggest thing that I see are just people leaving organizations and organizations that don't have proper policies on things. When they have someone new come in without proper procedures, it's hard to train up because, this is how the last guy or the last woman did it. And so they have to kind of start from the beginning and train up. So I would say post-pandemic, I think that just keeping people around is really one of the biggest things, that I'm seeing as far as gaps.
So when you say keeping people around, you mean the employees overall, or you mean on the security teams, on the IT teams?
No, I'm just talking about people job hopping. I'm saying that, people are – to retain people in this industry anymore is hard because the demand – pre-pandemic, companies were able to kind of get away with more than what they are now, because I think the pandemic made a lot of people realize – what they're worth, how valuable they are. And, work isn't everything. So people that were working 65 hours a week, many people are just done doing that. And, they're able to go somewhere else, and which is okay. They're able to go somewhere else, but then that leaves these companies kind of, scurrying to find people and without having, proper things put in place. You have to be able to train someone up. Training people up is very hard, but you have to have a process for that. And without having a baseline of, processes and things like that, that can be hard.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, to instill a good culture, too, it's more of a challenge. It definitely can be done and is done, but it's more of a challenge when everybody is dispersed remotely.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So tell us about what you're seeing in terms of some of the main policies that need to be addressed.
Yeah, absolutely. System hardening, I think, is one of them where, you know, systems are being, you have cloud migration that's happening so fast and things are being pushed to the cloud, but there's a lot of lacking oversight that things are getting pushed to the cloud, but they're not going through a proper process to make sure that these things are locked down. System hardening policies, things like that. Those are probably just a couple that I could mention.
Interesting. So walk us through kind of how you got started. Like, how did you break in? What was your big break, or what was the main educational thing that you did, whether it was a degree or certification, that really kind of opened the door for you? And that gets into some of our other discussions.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you mean as a vCISO, or do you mean into the cybersecurity field in general?
I mean into cybersecurity in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I started my journey when I was in my early 20s. And I started I worked for a dial-up internet provider. Mm-hmm. And my job was to read out of a book because I didn't know anything at the time. And I went from there, went to like a systems admin role, network admin role. And then I started consulting and I really liked working with people. I'm an extrovert by nature. So it's just great to kind of
get out. We can help.
Thanks.
I love your videos.
Thanks. I appreciate that. But I just liked working with people. Around 2010, 2011, I founded my own company called Cyber Protection Group. And with that company, I started just doing a lot of things. I got into defensive security, offensive security, a lot of contracts and things like that. And I'm the first to say I'm not an expert at anything, right? But I know a little bit about a lot of different things. And for me, I think my big break really was just having that ability to kind of bounce around a little bit and learn knowledge about just, you know, the different sectors, offense, defense. I found myself often being the conduit between the tech team and the stakeholders because, you know, the tech team can't always speak in the language that the stakeholders at the organization need to hear it in so that they can understand it from a business perspective. And so I would say just kind of it wasn't really a pre-planned thing. I did take some SANS classes back when I could barely afford it. You know, I slammed some SANS classes on my credit card. I was never a big cert person. I couldn't afford to take certifications. I was really looking for the product of knowledge out of these classes that I took. So I'd say it was just, just kind of a roundabout effort. It wasn't really one particular thing that I did that kind of landed me, you know, inside.
Right. Mike, if you could, maybe tell the non-technical attendees, what's the difference between offensive and defensive when it comes to cybersecurity?
Yeah, so offensive security is basically what we call, it's referred to as red team, you know, many times, where what we are trying to do is find the holes and find the vulnerabilities before the bad guys do. So we ethically hack, we try to find weaknesses in networks, web applications, what have you, and then report that to the organizations. The defensive side, blue team, is just what it is. It's the defensive side. So just like you see in the movies sometimes where people are watching all these big screens and things like that, you know, it can be like that. You're watching for anomalies. You're doing threat research. You're watching for things that just, you know, shouldn't be happening. So defense is kind of protecting, where offense is really trying to get into things, but then report on what you got into.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You know, we all have a lot of data, and it has to positively, absolutely stay safe.
It can't get into the wrong hands, and the biggest challenge we have is how to transfer it from here to there. We all know as leaders that legacy tools that transfer our important files and sensitive data are mostly outdated and fall short on security, especially with the demands of today's remote workforce. Relying on outdated technology puts our organization's brand at risk, and that is unacceptable. So we are excited to invite you to step into the future of completely secured managed file transfer from our friends at Kiteworks. Kiteworks is absolutely, positively the most secure managed file platform on the market today. They've been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. And unlike traditional legacy systems with limited functionality, Kiteworks has unmatched software security with ongoing bounty programs and regular pen testing to minimize vulnerabilities. And the coolest part, they have easy to use one-click appliance updates you will love. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's kiteworks.com to get started today. And now the show.
Excellent. So from what I'm sensing, it was about connecting the dots and problem solving and then being able to demonstrate that to stakeholders. And that's how you advance your career along the way.
You're right. And I would say just in life in general, probably what I'm good at is just solving problems, you know, whatever it is. And also the thing is, I'm not a crazy smart person, so I don't solve problems myself. I try to use, you know, I guess I'm just good at communicating and leveraging the resources to kind of, you know, work together to solve those problems. And I think in any situation, any career, I think if you can develop those skills, I think that can be a plus.
Well, that's good. I would argue that you are extremely bright, but also I think that it's that you recognize different specialties in the room and different people have to play their roles and things like that.
Absolutely. Yep.
That's good. So tell us about this, the cybersecurity playbook. Tell us about it. We'll have a link in the notes so that people can purchase it. But please walk us through this. This is a culmination of 25 years. Like talk to us about it. Walk us through it.
Yeah, no problem. So as you know, I'm an extrovert. I love helping people. You know, I chat with people. I do video calls sometimes, nights, weekends, you know, whatever. And I just enjoy, I love this field. And you know, I watch, you know, I see so many things out there that, you know, just misleading things. You know, you have to have X, Y, and Z to get into this field and to level up in this field. You got to go back for your master's or whatever it is. And there's just so many misconceptions. But the issue is that people are kind of believing those and following those. And so about a year ago, 11 months ago, I just kind of went all in on LinkedIn to kind of just spread my message, you know, which is my goal is to help people maybe make less errors than I made, you know, as I was going through the industry, as I was growing. And so I'll give actually a lot of credit to my wife. She mentioned to me months ago, she said, you know what, like, you gotta write a book, or you gotta get this down. I'm like, oh, well, I'm helping people on LinkedIn. And so I just decided that we made the decision together and spent some time. And I just took, it's about 60 pages, a little less than 60 pages. And I really just took knowledge, you know, successes and mistakes that I've made through my career. And I talk a little bit about everything. And so that's kind of, you know, how it came about. My wife and I sat many late nights. She would read the book out loud to me, and I would listen for grammar errors and things like that, because I don't consider myself an author or anything like that. It was just all kinds of stuff that I just, you know, it's a brain dump is what I kind of consider it. So, but it's a playbook that just kind of gives some direction. It's a two-part book. It talks about how to break into the field, how to kind of level up, even if you're stuck in your job, you know, you've been there for 10 years and you're stuck in a certain position. But then it also talks about the whole second part of the book is branding, right? Building out your own brand and using the LinkedIn platform to do that.
So let's get into, what do we say to somebody that is not yet in the cybersecurity field, but realizes that there are hundreds of thousands of jobs that we do not have people to fill those jobs right now, especially in the United States?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing I would say is there is a ton of opportunity, no doubt, entry level, clear to senior level. But the most important thing is you know, I hear often, you know what, I want to get into cybersecurity because I hear the money is good. And that is the absolute wrong reason to get into it.
Right. I mean, sure. Wrong reason to get into anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Wrong reason to practice law. It's the wrong reason to get into medicine, right? And become a doctor, right?
Yeah, you have to have a passion for it. If you have a passion for it, then
you'll get good at it, and then the money will come, right? Yep. Like it's
yeah. And the last thing I want is a doctor that got into it for the money.
Right. Exactly.
That's great. Yeah, you're exactly right. And you have to have a passion for it. And it is opportunistic because it's a field that, you know, listen, if you want to be a lawyer, you have to go through X, Y, and Z to do that. If you want to be a doctor, you have to go through X, Y, and Z. If you want to get into this great industry, you know, of course, you have to do things to get into it, but it's not laid out. There's no blueprint.
No, that's exactly right. It's somewhat of the Wild West, isn't it?
Yeah, like absolutely.
You can enter into, like, if you're just a regular network engineer, right, supporting, managing, configuring, and you want to shift over into cybersecurity, you can do that. If you're not an engineer, you can shift over into cybersecurity.
There's you're a truck whole, driver, you can shift into cybersecurity.
A bunch of opportunities.
It's funny. I belong to a couple online forums for cybersecurity, and there's constantly new people trying to come in and say, you know, what do I need to do? What's that first step? You ask 10 people that same question, and you get 10 different answers. You're so there exactly is right. There is no clear, defined path.
Yeah, and you know what? That's a good thing because, you know, that you don't have to follow what the last person did. It's whatever. It's all about knowledge gain. Because we all learn differently. Some people learn best in a classroom. Some people learn best online. Some people learn best reading by book. Some people learn best by practical experience. It's just about knowledge gain. No one cares how you acquired your knowledge. Just acquire it.
Right. And working at an organization, right, you can identify what their security needs are as you develop more security credentials, security certifications. You attend these groups. You brand yourself as a security expert, then there's going to be more opportunity if you want to stay within that organization to move up and segment over into that security role.
Absolutely. Yeah. An organization should never hire an entry-level person, just kind of set it and let it, right? Because that's not a safe bet. However, you know, we should be, you know, those who are already in the field should be mentoring those that are coming in. So if I were an entry-level person and I got an entry-level job, there's a good chance that I'm going to be working beside someone who's been there for 5 or 8 years. It's all about mentorship, which opens up, you know, a ton of other opportunities.
What are your thoughts about some of the more popular certifications? Like, how do you mentor? What advice do you give?
So certifications are great, and I respect. I mean, I went through and in the field for a while. So, you know, back in the day, I got my NT4 MCSE.
Yeah.
If anybody remembers that, then I went. Yep. I got my Windows 2000 MCSE, and a few others since. Certifications definitely show a willingness to learn. They definitely show you know, the habit of being able to work, right, and spend time and commit to something. The goal is the certification itself is just a byproduct of the knowledge. It should be just a byproduct of the knowledge that you've gained. The issue is that some people just go for that certification and they're studying how to pass that certification, and all they get is that byproduct, which is the certification, but they're left without some of the knowledge, right?
Because, you know, I think you mentioned something that really rang true is, in this industry that we're in, you've got to be willing to grow your knowledge base sometimes on a daily basis, not just to take a test and pass the test. You've got to be willing to understand what the changes are, how that affects things, how that affects your clients, what other changes are coming down the road, what are the new threat actors, what are the new tactics and techniques.
Absolutely.
If you're not willing to learn that, you probably need to go work on the assembly line at Ford because you've got to be willing to grow.
I totally agree. Totally agree. Yeah. And certifications, you're seeing, I don't want to say saturation, right? But you are seeing for every person who gets a new certification, the one that you have, that makes your cert just a little bit less valuable, you know, you've got that many more people. It's all about, supply and demand too.
Yeah. What about organizations that they can join? And then we'll get into, let's get into the self-branding and the leveraging LinkedIn, because what an amazing platform, what a powerful platform.
It is. Yes,
it's been for me, it's been for you, it's been for thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah.
What organizations, you know, Mark and I joined InfoGuard. That has really changed our ability in our limited role, right?
Yeah.
We're consultants for businesses, organizations, things like that. We're not cybersecurity specialists like you, but that really helped us because it opened up our eyes. It got us tied to federal law enforcement. We got to train organizations alongside federal
law enforcement. See a lot of stuff. Yeah, you get to see a lot of things.
Now we know where to get the information, where to keep up to date on things. What are some of the biggest organizations that you or some of the more influential ones that you recommend?
Yeah, well, I think actually InfoGuard's great. So I don't go to the meetings anymore. But you know, years back when I was first getting into the field, my boss at the time was very active in InfoGuard, and I went to meetings with him and so on. You know, a lot of that's changed too. So, you know, I would say a couple of things. First, try to find something local to where you are, because most of us sit in a room and we are remote. And I know for me, I'm in Springfield, Missouri. And, you know, I try to get involved with a local, you know, with a local group. And I think that's good. The other thing, too, and I know these aren't really organizations, but, you know, even some good groups on Discord, you know, I spend a lot of time in those places and so on.
But Discord, really?
There are some great people on Discord, some great groups, you know, for people that are kind of trying to, you learn to either break into this field, stay current, or even talk to peers. Discord's very, very active. And, you know,
I love the platform, not just for monitoring my children's gaming, but also just for awareness, because it's some of the forums and some of the things. What are some of the groups on Discord that you found useful?
Yeah, there's one called Cyber Jobs Hunting is one. There's that one. Actually, give me one second. I'm just going to pull this around. Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm a part of about 20 or 25 of them, something like that.
That's great. And Discord is a good, it's usually a way that people are able to communicate while they're gaming or while they're doing other things. And
yes, Simply Cyber is one of them. Security Noobs is another one. If you just get on Discord and you just literally type cybersecurity, you're going to find
They'll pop up.
All kinds.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. And thank you, Erica Miller. It's always good with audience participation.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what hit it? Look at these two dapper men. Oh, that's great. Thank you, Erica Miller. That's great. So let me ask you this. Let's talk about LinkedIn. Okay. I hear it's going to be big. I'm hearing.
That's what the rumor is, right?
It might take off. Where people can meet and actually share professional passions and share resources.
I don't know if it's a thing yet, but it might turn.
Yeah, I think it's going to be big. But tell us about it. Like how, you know, self-branding, I think LinkedIn has a great, their article writing platform, their blog platform there is phenomenal, right?
Oh, yeah.
Once you get to enough followers, you can do LinkedIn Live, share your message, things like that. You can do LinkedIn Audio Live, love it. Like all that stuff's great. But talk to us about your advice on leveraging LinkedIn. Like to connect to the right people and to rebrand yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, whether we all agree or disagree, we are all in business, whether we think we all are.
Everybody's got a brand, whether they market it well or not is a different discussion.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We all have special skills, special talents that we've learned over the years. We're all different. And whether we like it or not, we're in the business of being able to sell the services that we have acquired over the years. And, you know, not to have our own business, but, you know, you have to be able to gain employment if you want to be successful in this field. And LinkedIn really, you know, so 20 years ago, if I was looking for a new job 25 years ago, I would have drove around and I would have stopped in at places and I would have went, I call it resume slinging. I would have, you know, I would have been slinging resumes. And it's changed. You know, right now your LinkedIn profile is pretty much your online resume. And I know, you know, when I've hired over the years with my company, you know, I look at a resume, that's great. I look at it for about 60 seconds. First thing I do is go to their LinkedIn profile to see
what is their branding, right? What's their post, what's their blogs look
like. Yeah, you're exactly right. Are they are you a person that's contributing to the cybersecurity community? Are you a positive person? Are you someone that I can work with for 8 hours a day? Even if it's virtually, you know, what type of personality, what type of person are you? And right now, I think I just read the latest stats, like 1.6 million people. I'm not just going to say recruiters, but 1.6 million people are using the back end of LinkedIn, like the recruiting service, to search for people like all of us that are in the field. And, they're searching right here on LinkedIn. So having that presence is important. And I always say not using LinkedIn is like going to a, local networking event and standing in a corner or going without any business cards. It just doesn't make any sense.
So let me challenge one thing that you said, because we train internally at we have a global company that we work for. We train internally on social media use. And one of the things that we said, it was like a mantra that we kept saying, is LinkedIn is not your resume. Don't make LinkedIn your resume. Make your resume your resume. Make LinkedIn be your brand. Right. And I think we're saying the same thing, right? Because
I think that is one of the
things. You just don't want LinkedIn to be very dry and boring and say, this is what I did here or this is what I did there. Like if you're a consultant in a certain field, right? Don't put on LinkedIn, oh, you sold a lot. You made President's Club. You did it because
I don't want to know that you broke a business owner. I don't want to know that, 3 years in a row.
That's not for LinkedIn, right? That's not for LinkedIn. It's I help clients solve these problems, right? In this industry, by doing this, by doing that, that's what matters, right? Yeah. And then when you get in the job interview or you're posting, that's for Indeed, right? The actual, like what your metrics, did you make plan, not make plan, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. You have your resume, and LinkedIn is the way of really getting that resume out there. You know, my end goal for people that I mentor is that they land recruiters in their inbox. You know, I coach people on that so that they come back to me 2 or 3 months later and say, hey, you know what? I've had like 10 recruiters hit my inbox. So that's my end goal, right? And then they can pass that resume out. But your online profile is definitely your LinkedIn profile is definitely a snapshot of your skills and really, you know, who you are.
I think it shows what you're passionate about too, right? What do you talk about? What makes you motivated to the point that you're going to go write something in a public forum? What is that motivation for you? What is it? What drives you?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly right. I mean, I'm living proof too. I mean, my last two jobs, this one I've had for close to 8 years, I was recruited without asking by a recruiter on LinkedIn. I was at my old organization, happy, not looking, and posting and writing articles and doing things, and somebody reached out and I was like, I don't know. I had no idea. Like I didn't even know what was out there really.
Yeah, the opportunity is unreal. I wasn't even looking to sell my company, and they found me, a company called Appalachia Technologies, found me on LinkedIn. And we just, you know, started communicating. And next thing you know, they acquired me and I stayed on with them. But, you know, long story short, that was a byproduct of just using LinkedIn to its fullest capabilities.
See, that's a great case study right there that you were approached by somebody else. Company. Yeah. That found you on LinkedIn, thought enough of your profile and what your messaging was to even have that conversation. That's pretty big.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the company has hired, you know, tons of people that have been successful with the organization, you know, not because they're local, but because, you know, we've seen their presence. You know, we've seen who they are.
What are your thoughts on the groups, LinkedIn groups? Because I find a lot of people don't even know they exist. or they don't really anticipate them. And I find a lot of resources through the LinkedIn groups.
Yeah. I don't use them as much as I should. So I am in some pen testing groups from back in my pen testing days. But, you know, I guess I'll be the devil's advocate there. I almost feel like they just don't get the traffic that an organic post gets, you know, that everybody sees.
I agree.
I will say there is a ton of great information in the groups. Like you said, you can pull a ton of information out and contribute. Personally, for me, I just haven't used them, you know, I guess to its fullest.
Here's where I've found some value in them. And that is, you can be part of a group that you're not connected to. Like, you can get resources and see posts and contribute with people that might not normally come up on your feed, but because you're in this group, all of a sudden, and you join a group that you're passionate about, and all of a sudden you see something come up on your feed, you can comment, you can ask questions, you see an interesting poll, things like that. What are some of the tactics that you recommend when leveraging LinkedIn? Like, how often should somebody post? Or
should you post? Do you use polls?
Yep, absolutely. So, and people are, you know, this is like Ford and Chevy. People argue what I'm going to tell you, you know, left and right. But here's what's worked for me, right? First of all, I've always tried to be transparent, and I've always just tried to be myself. I will say early on, you know, I envied so many other people, right? Where I might have, I'm thinking, man, I'd love to be like Cameron. I'd love to be like her. And I would try to, in a way, try to be like that. But it took me a while to figure out that, like, I just got to be myself, right? So try to be transparent, try to be real. From there, it's just, it's making connections. So the cool thing about this platform is, I sound like I work for LinkedIn, but I really don't. The cool thing about this platform is, you know, it's a level playing field. So whether you're someone who's aspiring to get into the field or the CEO or president of a company, LinkedIn sees us all. It's just a level playing field, right? So if you're able to, I guess I call it planting seeds. If you're able to plant seeds and grow and curate relationships, you know, you have access to people that you would never have access to, you know, via any other way. So it's making connections, right? Sending connection requests out. Don't just follow people. Like, you know, make that connection request. I call it just shaking hands, planting seeds.
So I talk to people all the time that are like, well, first I want to make sure I meet with them in person before I connect with them on LinkedIn. I'm like, what? It's never going to happen. Yeah. Like, just connect. Yep. Just connect. And that, like, don't, like, the only thing I would always caution people against is right after you connect, don't ping their direct message.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Like, please don't have that, like, canned thing about, you know, if you're interested in real estate in Colorado, please. I'm like, did you read my profile? Do I look like I'm interested in real estate in Colorado? I don't live there. I'm not, like, why would you do that? Like, right off the bat. It's just a canned thing. And it's like, that's kind of a turnoff as opposed to just engaging and then commenting. And then if you have a question, you can direct message them later, things like
that. No one wants a salesman, and we all have our own products, right? I mean, I have products I can sell you right now, but that's not my job on LinkedIn. All of us make passive sales through LinkedIn. I mean, my goal is to create as many relationships as I can. They can see my passion. They can see what I do. And many of them DM me, they'll send me a message and say, hey, we'd like to use your services for this or that. And so that's my goal. It's not to come off as salesy, right? But shake that hand, you know, make that connection request, engage with others that have engagement on the platform. Don't worry if they're someone that's aspiring to get into the field or whether they're a VP of an organization. Like, don't be concerned about their title. Just make sure they're in the industry. But it's showing up. As far as you would ask, you know, what days a week or how many times you post a week. You know, I try to be I'm consistent, but not consistent, because I never know what days I'm going to post. What I will tell you is many of my posts, I try to time between Monday and Thursday. My best luck has been Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays. However, I've had Saturday and Sunday posts blow up. It really just depends on your audience. It depends on the audience too. It depends on, you know, what you're putting out there, if it's relevant for, you know, for that time period you're putting it out.
Well, yeah, and that's a really good point too, because when we go and we meet with organizations, right, and we have a business meeting with somebody, right, we always find that they've looked at us on LinkedIn. Yeah. And so whenever we're posting, I just always coach our team, just like, what do you want them to see about you?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You only want them to see that you're posting something negative or something about just sports, or like, is it going to be something that might be germane Absolutely. To the people that you're trying to appeal to?
Yeah. And I always say too, put out your own content. We all share stuff. Yep. You know, I will say, if you look back in my feed, I very rarely use external links. I very rarely share stuff. Yeah. My reason for that is
resharing. The algorithm seems to be against
it. Doesn't work
that way. Tanks. It absolutely tanks when you share stuff. And you know, I hate that too, because I want to be able to share stuff, but I have found that if I share something out, my next two or three posts are going to tank as well. You know, it's just the way it works. Because I have literally had people asking me every single day if I'll share something for them. But the truth is, it's not going to do any of us any good, because in a matter of a couple of days, you know, all the traffic's just going to be gone anyhow. So and, you know, create your own content, you know, and you don't have to be an expert at anything. A good question is great content. If you have a good question.
Polls can be good. Just think it through, right?
Absolutely.
So when people are creating their brand and they're getting into a new field, oftentimes they don't feel like they're an expert, right? And they almost feel like there's this imposter feeling, or they don't feel worthy. Like, talk to us about what your thoughts are on imposter syndrome.
Yeah, absolutely. I can talk about it a lot. It's something that, I mean, I still struggle with 25, 26 years into the field. Doesn't matter how long you've been in the field. Doesn't matter what you've learned. I think you're always going to feel a sense of that. You know, it's just feeling like you don't belong, feeling like you're not strong enough at what you're doing, just feeling out of place. What's worked for me, I mean, I still struggle with it every day. What's worked for me is being able to leverage it so that, you know, if I have a client that I'm meeting with and we're going to be talking about this certain feature or this certain piece of software, I know I'm not going to go into the room being the smartest one, but at the same time, before I go into that call, I'm going to do my research. I'm going to probably stay up a little bit late. I'm going to read about it. I'm going to get up early. I'm going to prepare. So I've kind of, over the years, learned to use imposter syndrome as leverage, I guess, to keep me on edge as far as learning, you know, as much as I can. So I think you can spin it and, you know, have it affect you positively. But it all comes down to confidence. So you have to be confident as a person. You know, you have to be confident in who you are. But imposter syndrome is real. I could have told you what it even meant 5 years ago if someone would have. I finally Googled it. Yeah, I think maybe a year ago. I'm like, why is everyone talking about this thing? And I looked it up, and it was like that light bulb moment. I'm like, man, that's like me. And I think that's a lot of us. And I think if we ever reach a point where we feel like we're the smartest one in the room, then we need to like reevaluate.
Yeah, then it's the opposite of imposter syndrome, right? Yeah. Then you're like, well, hang on.
Exactly. No,
I think you hit it on the head, right? Research preparation, right? If you research, you prepare, and you recognize that if you just recognize yourself as a lifelong learner, right, and a connector of people and resources, there is no you're not being non-genuine. Right. You're not being genuine. You are being authentic. Right.
Yes.
Because the key is authenticity that we all want. But when we enter fields and we enter subject matter that we're not experts on, at least research and prepare before those meetings, before those presentations, do the research for the articles that you post, things like that.
Absolutely.
Yep. Absolutely. That's really good. Hey, that's phenomenal. Mike Miller, thank you so much. Break into Cyber Playbook. We'll have your link so people can order it. It is phenomenal. And I love what you're doing for LinkedIn. I love what you're doing for the cybersecurity field. Just keep doing it,
thank
man.
You.
It's good stuff.
I encourage all the attendees to definitely follow you, if not connect with you on LinkedIn, because you've got some great information that you push out. I think everybody would find value in it.
With the touch of humor, like the
The delivery is pretty good. I'll give you that.
Last week where you're like, I am just keeping job security going, and you're clicking on me now.
I like that one.
My wife just rolls her eyes. You know, I'm like, man, I'm making a video.
So true.
It was good though. It was very spot on.
Well, thanks.
If it wasn't for Mrs. Buttermaker in the third floor cubicle clicking on everything, right?
And clicking on every hyperlink that comes through.
We wouldn't be out of this podcast.
That's exactly right. Mike, thank you so much for spending time with us. That was really good. We appreciate all the insight and the information.
Absolutely. Yeah. Guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it, everybody.
All right.
See you.
Take care.
Bye, guys.
Hi, Cybercrime Junkies. Thanks for listening.
Got a question you want us to address on an episode? Reach out to us at cybercrimejunkies.com. We explore why cybercrime grows daily, how it is funded, productized, and organized, how to protect yourself, and where cybercrime goes to hide. And thanks for being a cybercrime junkie.